Breakthrough Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti. Today I'm in Rome for the presentation of Ghostbusters by Paul Feig with Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones and Chris Hemsworth. So Paul, how did you embark upon this project?
Ivan Reitman called me when I was making the movie Spy, and I was in Budapest, and he had a script that was a sequel and wanted me to do it, and I was so flattered because I'm such a fan of his and also of the whole property. But got very nervous because I didn't know how to do it, and I liked the script, but it didn't feel like, for me, the right fit. And so turned it down, and then when I got back from Budapest, Amy Pascal called me to lunch at Sony and said, you know, why doesn't anybody want to do this movie? And I said, because it's dangerous. It's this famous film. But at the same time, you know, she said, well, it's this great idea, this great franchise sitting there. And that made me take pause, because it's an amazing idea for a comedy about funny people in, you know, using technology to fight the paranormal is great. And so I thought, okay, if I could do it the way that I would think would be the best, what would I do? It's like, well, I work with all these funny women. If I could cast the funny women and do it as a reboot, start it again, so that we're not tied to the old one and not compared to the old one, I thought that would be the way to do it. So I told Amy Pascal that idea, and she said, we love it. And then we were off to the races.
To what extent the recent fights of the women in Hollywood to promote gender equality has influenced your decision to have a female cast in Ghostbusters?
Well, it's something I've always wanted to do my whole life, my whole career. I love funny women. And when we did Bridesmaids, it was the first time that it had... but that was my first chance to do it, and it was successful enough where it opened the debate of whether movies starring women could be commercial, which is a ridiculous debate, because Hollywood created a situation in which they weren't giving women good roles in movies, so then the few times they would give them the lead, men wouldn't show up. So it was a self-perpetuating idea that women couldn't draw an audience, and it was only because they were giving such bad roles to women in general, or putting them in movies that only appealed to women, that were romantic, you know, romantic comedies that were very, very female-centric. And so for me, this is just a natural extension of what I've always wanted to do, and I credit Sony with allowing me to put four women in an enormous tentpole film like this. That's a real testament to Amy Pascal, who was still running the studio at the time, and to Tom Rothman for keeping our budget high and not pulling it back once he came into power. So I'm very grateful, but you know, the time has come. It's what I love to do.
Going on this team, the impression is that those who attacked the film didn't do it because the work was going to touch an icon, but because of a kind of a misogyny. So there were even personal attacks. I'm thinking about a lot of bad things that I've read on the internet on Melissa McCarthy, for example, about her being fat. So this is why I think it's very serious, much more than the accuse of touching an iconic film.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it's a great statement. Mm-hmm. I get in trouble a lot because I say that a lot of it is misogyny, and I do stand by that. There are people that are just upset that we are touching a classic, and I understand that, and they're mad. Some people are mad that we're making it a reboot, not a sequel, and I understand that. But there is a level of attack going on that you do not see against other reboots, remakes, and what happens is then when there is another... When someone else gives a legitimate complaint, that side will grab it and run with it because it's a way to hide an agenda they have, which is, look, I was there at the beginning. The first wave, when I first announced, it was total misogyny. It was total misogyny. And then it morphed, and then there were people who were concerned, and I never want it to be portrayed that I'm saying that everybody against this is a misogynist. But that runs deep in a lot of this, because you do not see this type of vitriol against other movies that are rebooted. And I find it disturbing. I have to walk a line of being careful, because I get accused all the time of saying anybody who's a critic is a misogynist. And I never want to, I don't want to stop public discourse, and I don't want to say somebody who doesn't want something is a terrible person, but there is a level of it that is much deeper than what we are saying, that what people are admitting to. But I'll get in trouble for that, too. We only had one goal when making this movie, which was to make a very fun movie that would let people have fun. And I can't believe that it's taken on this level of political importance. I find very depressing. Look, plenty of people who are against it say, it's a cash grab by the studio. Every movie that a studio in Hollywood makes, they want to make money, yes. But it's up to filmmakers to then say, oh, we can take this and we can make them money by giving people something fun and doing something that we think is great. And that was the only reason we did this. And I wanted to put the funniest people I know. It's these four women. And it's just, I find it crazy that it's taken on this political, giant political importance. It's ridiculous.
Not just a thought on reboots in general. Can they help new generations to like and know our cult movies, the ones that have just marked our life and experiences?
I personally think yes, because it frees a new generation from having to have intimate knowledge of a previous generation's movie. That's not normally, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, Star Wars, it clearly worked, but at the same time, there were only two Ghostbusters. The first one's beloved, the second one, some people like, some people don't. So 30 years later, to then say we have to be slavish to the first two movies, it just felt like we're requiring a lot from the public versus it's the idea that's great. And it was that original cast that was great. Bill wasn't going to do it. Harold's gone. So you had Dan and Ernie, who are great. But that you would have half a team passing something on to another new generation, which that to me is not that exciting. Like, here's your proton pack. Here's your ghost trap. Go catch ghosts. Versus a new generation that can have that same experience that I had 32 years ago in the movie theater. I was like, look at this movie. Look at these funny people. My God, what's this world? That, to me, is important. And what I feel that a lot of the intolerant people who are mad that it's not that are taking out of the equation is giving to a new generation that excitement they felt when they saw the new one. Is ours as good? I don't know. I would never dare to say. But that was the motivation behind it. And I do think that we can get too slavish to what came before. Time magazine did an article and said movies could be looked at as songs, where you cover a song you love and then a new band covers that song and it's a new take on the song and you like that song, but it doesn't ruin the old song. And I think that's kind of how I look at this. Is like, it almost felt more respectful to the original movies to keep this separate from them if it didn't work. So
I'm curious to know, how did you work on keep and develop the distinctive features of the original movie? I'm thinking about the actor one, for example, Slimer, the logo.
Well, Katie Dippold and myself, who wrote it, are huge fans of the original movie. And the first thing we said is, what would we be sad as fans of the original movie if we didn't see? And it was very quick. The Ecto-1, Proton Pack, Slime, the logo, the song, Slimer. And so kind of listed those out and then said, okay, well now, how can we have fun in a way that fans of the old movie will appreciate that we're nodding our head towards it and also finding a fun origin story for it, and yet a new generation who's never seen the original can just discover it naturally. And so that's where it became fun. I'm going like, oh, let's see where the logo came from. Oh, it was a graffiti guy. Where did the Ecto-1 come from? Oh, it was Patty's uncle owned a hearse. And then also for the proton packs, let's see how they develop. Let's actually make the first proton pack a giant machine on wheels you have to push around, and then Holtzman learns each time that she has to miniaturize and how to make things better, so that it's all a pure origin story. And I guess for us, we felt that was a way to have fun with the original fans and yet bring it to a new generation at the same time. Hopefully it worked.
Thank you, Paul Feig, for being here with us and share your experience directing the reboot of Ghostbusters with an entire female cast. And this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Thank you so much.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.